You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Welcome along, William Hill's boxing podcast. Steve Bunt's on the line as we prepare for one of the big fights of the year this weekend, and then we've got Joshua Povetkin the following weekend. We won't go on about how great a time it is to be a fan of boxing or working in boxing. Before we get on to this weekend, let's look at AJ versus Povetkin. Anthony Joshua, the newly crowned, and I'm sure he's most proud of this accolade, William Hill Global Ambassador, no less. Coming up against, every fight for him is pretty tough now, but if you look at Povetkin alongside someone like Joseph Parker, then this guy is a serious test. And I know he's someone that you've always liked a lot.
Well, about a year ago, when we were scratching around wondering who Joshua was going to fight, just before they announced he was going to fight a guy called Kubrat Pulev, which fell through, and he ended up fighting a short French guy called Carlos Takam. Over a year ago, in fact, we talked on one of these podcasts about Alexander Povetkin being one of the outside bets, being one of the potential choices. And I didn't like him then, and I don't like him now, in a sense. I think he's a danger, I really do. And I was up in Sheffield this week talking to Joshua, and also talking to Joshua's people, Eddie Hearn, the promoter, and Robert McCracken, his trainer. And I can tell you now that, and it's not just hype, they're going to have a sellout here and do fantastic figures and numbers. I think they're both a little bit concerned, and McCracken is particularly concerned, because McCracken is aware of the same thing that I'm aware of, is that Povetkin always gives away height and always gives away reach and always gives away bulk. So when people keep saying, oh yeah, but Joshua is so much taller, so much stronger and so much heavier and bigger, Povetkin knows that. Povetkin's not going to get in there and go, oh, no one told me he was 6'6". He's been fighting guys that are 4 inches taller, 3 stone heavier and have 5 inch longer reach for years. That's what he's done. He's only lost to one. And that was to Vladimir Klitschko when he was dropped several times, but gave it a go from first bell to last bell. 39, nearly 40, had some hard years, had some controversial years. This is a dangerous fight. If Joshua in any way has his eyes on the future, if Joshua in any way has cut corners in his head, because he doesn't cut corners when he works out, he's got the stats to prove that he's trained harder, run harder, sparred more, blah, blah, blah. That's irrelevant. You can cut corners in your head. I saw Joshua yesterday and he was focused. In fact, he was disturbingly focused. It was the most serious and edgy and semi-agitated I've ever seen Joshua. And Lee, I couldn't have been happier. That was what I wanted to see.
There's a bit of a link between, I guess, Povetkin and Canelo this weekend. The drug story is taking up some of the headlines. How much of an impact do you think that's had on Povetkin's career? In terms of how much of a better boxer did it make him, do you think? Because when I watched him against... He's 39, let's not forget. And when I watched him against Price, I'm not saying Price would have finished him, but if that punch that he landed had happened maybe a minute before the end of the round rather than on the bell, more or less, then Price could have had him in serious bother.
Yeah, Price could have had him in serious bother. And what Povetkin will say is that he wasn't really up for that fight. He knew it was just a treading water fight, and he'd eventually get to David Price, which he did. Broke his nose, 30 stitches inside his mouth, 4 stitches above his eye. So he finished it in some considerable style, my friend. Don't worry about that. He's failed 2 tests. Okay, we're not sure about his testing. He's been tested for this fight, so he's sailing through this fight. And it's such a grey area. Boxing really, Lee, is probably where athletics and cycling were 15, 10 or even 20 years ago. We're learning in boxing to deal, cope, solve, and then exclude the so-called drug cheats. We're learning what particular drugs and in what degree of protocol is being employed by the men that are feeding them, and some might be women, the chemists. And they are chemists. It's not some grubby guy down the local gym supplying guys like this. It's professional chemists who have decided not to be a professional chemist, but have decided instead to work on the dark side and peddle illegal drugs to young men and young women to, quote, enhance and help, end quote, their boxing careers. Let's get that straight. It's not some dodgy geezer selling out the back of a second-hand Honda at the back of a gym. It's not. These are sophisticated men and women who are putting these programs together. And we're still discovering, we're still learning with boxing. He's been fined, he's been banned, he's been excluded. He's now clean and he's fighting. Same with Canelo Alvarez, who we'll talk about in a moment. He failed two tests in February. He was suspended for 6 months and he's been taking various random tests since April. Can we do more? Absolutely. Can athletics do more? Absolutely. Can swimming, tennis, golf, can they all do more to get rid of cheats, either financial cheats or drug cheats? Absolutely. And it just so happens in boxing, we've got a couple of high-profile guys in a couple of massively high-profile fights who have, during the last 2 or 3 years, been banned or suspended. Now, in athletics, you know, we had the same thing. You know, we had Justin Gatlin win a world championship on the Olympic track just a couple of years ago in the world championships. A man that had fouled at least, I think, twice he'd been banned and excluded from the sport. It doesn't make it right me saying this, but we're working our way and we're trying to come up with solutions. And in an ideal world, Lee, people would be banned. But then there's the guys that buy the stuff over the counter, can prove it's bought over the counter, and they're failing for something that they've bought legally.
Yep.
They're completely different to the guys that go and lock themselves away somewhere in Siberia and go on a 3-month drug binge.
Yeah.
It's early days, Lee.
It's not
good. You can tell from my voice.
I'm not
happy with it.
No.
But it's what we're having to deal with at the moment.
Yeah. Whenever I think about it, I mean, the piece that you guys did on the BBC Boxing podcast with Tony Bellew, when he talked passionately about the fact that, you know, no drug cheating is right, but in boxing, you go in the ring with the express intent of hurting the other person, and for a serious injury to take place in a ring, and then to be found out that the opponent who caused that injury was in some way taking an illegal substance would be would be an absolute tragedy for the sport as well as the boxers involved, wouldn't it? But that's for another day and for another podcast. But yeah, it just leaves more of a sour taste. You know, someone running 100 metres as fast as they possibly can, there's a lot of people cheated out of that. But this is different. It just feels like a different level, doesn't it?
It doesn't feel like a different level.
It is
a different level. Yeah, you know, this is a real problem, and various organisations around the world are working to try and stamp it out. They're introducing things. You know, basically, we have to have, in my opinion, random drug testing for every single boxer that has a license and that wants to take part in bouts for any kind of title. So it's no good if the guy comes from the middle of nowhere and he shows up in Las Vegas for a WBC or WBA title fight. He needs to have been randomly tested for X amount of days, years, or months. And to get that in place, I'm afraid if the promoters who talk about it and the boxers who talk about wanting it clean and the sanctioning bodies who talk about wanting it to be clean, then they're going to have to siphon off some of the money, as the TV companies are, and put it in a fund and hire hundreds of testers. Because we've got nearly 1,000 professionals in this country, Lee. You can't expect them to be randomly drug tested. That is just absurd.
Mm.
You know, that would be a whole squadron of drug testers working around the clock. It's not going to happen.
No.
Because it's just too much money. Anyway, let's crack on.
Yeah. Well, let's have a look at the fighting this weekend, shall we? Top of the bill fight, Gennady Golovkin versus Saul Alvarez. Let's have a look at a few of the undercard ones. I mean, we've got Roman Gonzalez versus Moises Fuentes and Jamie Munguia versus Brandon Cook priced up. Both the favourites there. Gonzalez and Munguia are both very short, Buncey, 1-14 and 1-66. So there's probably not an awful lot of we need to say about those. You can bet on the individual rounds on both those fights, so how the fight will end. Quick word on both of those. Do you think both of those are stoppages, or are you looking at points? Or
no, I think both of those should be stoppages, and I think Gonzalez, obviously, you know, the guy that was destined, you know, alongside GGG, he was on a great run, then it went wrong a little bit last year. I think late in 2019, last year, and Munguia I like a lot. He's recently beat Liam Smith on BT, and I like him a lot. He's only a kid. Sometimes he fights a bit too much like a kid. Yeah, I fancy a couple of stoppages there between the 4 and 7 mark.
Let's have a look at one that's a bit closer. David Lemieux is 1-2 to beat Gary O'Sullivan, who's 8-5. It's 22-1, the price for the draw there. Gary O'Sullivan, fighting out of Cork, 34-year-old. His record reads 28-2-0. He's been stopped once in those two defeats. That was against Chris Eubank Jr. back in 2015. I don't seem that long ago, that. David Lemieux, of course, we last saw him. He's fought since Billy Joe Saunders, but we saw him in that fantastic performance by Billy Joe Saunders, arguably one of the performances of the year in 2017. He's won since then. Buncey, in terms of the prices are fairly close here. Gary O'Sullivan 8-5 against this guy. I mean, I thought he might be priced up a little bit bigger than that, to be honest with you. He's 34, Gary O'Sullivan. No belt on the line here. Fighting at the T-Mobile Arena, of course, in Vegas. It'd be some occasion for O'Sullivan. Can he beat Lemieux?
It's a big ask. And Spike and Packy Collins, his trainer, Pascal Collins, Steve Collins, his brother. They certainly believe they can. Lemieux is now claiming all sorts of injuries. I think he's forgotten what his original excuse was for losing to Billy Joe Saunders. Well, he didn't lose. I mean, he got exposed. He got brutalised, didn't he? Short of being stopped. He'd have been better off being stopped in four rounds than given an unbelievable boxing lesson in front of his home fans, family, for 12 rounds. Spike got stopped by Chris Eubank because he went into that fight without any fear or respect. He previously lost on points to Billy Joe Saunders. Billy Joe Saunders had beaten Chris Eubank, and I think Spike put one and one together and was convinced he'd walk through Eubank. It didn't happen. He fought, in my opinion, the wrong fight. Then he sort of resurrected himself, went out to various places in America where the Irish love to come out and support the Irish, and they got a couple of good wins. He really fancied it. However, really fancying it and being confident and overconfident and going out and having no respect for an opponent is the worst thing you can do against David Lemieux. He's a bit wooden, Lemieux, without a doubt, but he bangs like hell. You know, he got Golovkin's attention when he fought Golovkin. He never got Billy's attention because Billy didn't give him a chance to get his attention. It was a masterclass by Billy, masterminded, created and pushed through by the corner man, Dominic Ingle, on the night, who made Billy concentrate in every second of every round by talking to him and calming him down during every second of the 60-second break. So Spike's problem here might just be his heart. If Spike were to box a little bit more and then try and avoid getting involved, I think he can win on points. If he gets involved, he'll get clipped because he can really bang Lemieux. Don't worry about that. And he's got a bit of an axe to grind. He's got something to prove, Lemieux. I'd like to say Spike on points, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if Lemieux got to him. And, you know, you've got to fancy Lemieux getting to him, really, to be honest with you. If Lemieux's going to stay at the level he's at and keep Spike away, he's going to have to look impressive. If it goes long, I think it's Spike's fight. If it goes short, it's Lemieux's fight.
We'll put even money for the stoppage for Lemieux. Then the fight of the night, Buncey, is the rematch between Gennady Golovkin, GGG, and Saul Alvarez, El Canelo. 49-1. 49-1-2, his record. Of course, his loss coming against Floyd Mayweather Jr. back in 2013. The first fight between these two ended in a draw, and that's the only, if you can call it a blemish on Triple G's record. 38 wins, 34 by stoppage. An absolute machine, of course. 36 himself, Buncey. Obviously, we've talked about the drugs backdrop, which is why the rematch of this was postponed in the first place. There's a lot said about rematches and whether they kind of mirror the first fight. Who will have learnt more from the first fight? Who will improve the most from the first fight, do you think, Buncey?
I'm not sure either of them will have improved much before the first fight, and I don't think either of them need to do much different in the rematch. The first fight was tight, although one score was disgracefully 10 rounds to 2 in Canelo's favour. A woman called Adelaide Bird messed up massively, royally, that particular night. The fight itself was tight, you know, a really tight, hard, close fight. I see it being the same way, same thing this way. Now, a lot depends on whether you consider Canelo's performance last year was enhanced and enriched and helped by any potential illegality outside the ring, or whether you consider the fact that Golovkin lost the last two rounds on all three scorecards as a sign that down the straight he was struggling slightly. And there's a case to be made probably for both of those things. Who's going to be fresher a year on? Well, you'd have to think it's the older man. Sorry, you have to think it's the younger man, of course, not the older man who's had 300 amateur fights and is unbeaten so far as a professional. I see it being tight. I see it being the same kind of free-flowing fight it was last time. It was a better fight last time than we gave it credit for, and that's because we built it up to be the greatest fight ever. It wasn't the greatest fight ever, but you know what? It was, as they say in America, a damn good fight. I watched some of it again the other night, and I was reminded of stuff I'd forgotten, i.e. just how intense it was. It was a good fight last time. It just wasn't the fight of the century, which is what we were hoping for. We might get something even better this time. This time I fancy Golovkin to scrape across the line. I'd be stunned if there are any legitimate scores more than two or three rounds in his favour. Of course, there could be one that's 12-0 to make up for last year's absolute disgrace. But I fancy Golovkin just on point. Just. But you know what? I wouldn't be at all surprised if it's really tight going into the last couple of rounds when Canelo, with his engine, and he's still got an engine, should start the push on. Really tight, but I just fancy Triple G on point.
The outright betting on the fight itself, 4-6 for Golovkin. The draw is 16-1, happened before, of course, and Alvarez is 11-8. Just one little bet. The price for Triple G by decision is 2-1, Buncey, so not bad at all. But what about this one? Golovkin to win on points and Alvarez to be knocked down in the fight, 8-1. That looks a very nice bet. I mean, you know, you basically got to take a count. You know what I mean? And that can happen. We know that can happen. And then you've got that in the bag. And then Golovkin's already got a 10-8 round potentially there. And then you've got that 8-1. That's under the your odds on the fight page. Golovkin to win on points, Alvarez to be knocked down in the fight, 8-1. I like that.
We want it to be the fight of the century. That's the better century, Lee. The better century.
I've been putting together an echo on those fights we've discussed as we've gone through, Buncey.
Yep.
And so it's Munguia by stoppage. Gonzalez, we've only got to win, so that's a shorty. But Gonzalez to win. Lemur by stoppage, evens, and Golovkin by decision is priced up at, if I can get the treble up, 7-1.
Oh, 7-1,
four-timer, not a treble, sorry. Four-timer, treble.
Four-timer,
7-1, and so you have that bet, and then have your that special your odds bet.
Have the
8-1,
bingo.
Yeah, and one of those comes in, and you've paid for your evening. Buncey, thanks very much. We'll speak to you ahead of Joshua versus Povetkin next week. Enjoy this weekend, though.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.